Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Hercules Invictus and Athena Victory celebrate the mythic impulses of ancient Greece and Rome, and they invite you to celebrate with them. Welcome to Voice of Olympus.
Welcome to Voice of Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus.
And I'm Athena Victory.
And we're glad you could join us here today here on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Tonight, we will be revisiting the Oliphant Mystery for part two of this exciting and paranormal location that we discovered over a decade ago and have been studying ever since. And we have on today not only Mirror Living, who is a fellow sacred guardian of the Oliphant Mystery, but we have the discoverer, John. For those who are not familiar with the Oliphant Mystery, let me explain. Many years ago in Pennsylvania, during one of our regional folklore society meetings at the Hawley Public Library, an older gentleman came up to me and asked me if I knew about the Oliphant Mystery. And I thought about it for a second and said, no, I do not. And he said, it relates to Olympus. Oli from Olympus and font from light. And even though that was possible, I did not think it was probable. But he had my attention there with light from Olympus. And we entered into a conversation that grew into preoccupation over the next following months. The Oliphant Mystery is in the town of Oliphant, Pennsylvania, northeastern Pennsylvania, in the Pocono region. And tonight we're going to learn a lot more about it. And who knows, maybe you too will become a sacred guardian of the Oliphant Mystery. Athena and I are.
Ooh,
without further ado, we will speak to my good friend and fellow sacred guardian, Mirror Living. Greetings, Mirror Living. How are you?
Greetings. I'm good. How is everyone? Good?
Everyone here is fine. It's so great to be talking to you again.
Always a pleasure. Always.
Now, we're not going to get into it tonight, but you and I have several dreams that we're dreaming together that are going to lead to interesting journeys that we can invite people on. And also, you have a whole list of projects you're working on by yourself. You want to share a little bit about that before we get into the Oliphant Mystery?
Well, some of the projects I've been working on have been synchronicity. That has been one big one for me. It's led me through many areas of my life, and it's brought me many answers. And I have a synchronicity library that I'm trying to just kind of receive people's experiences, and they can just, you know, put them in the forum and we can discuss them, or just, you know, leave it there so everyone can see that the phenomenon of synchronicity is something real, because I think a lot of people just kind of turn their head and ignore it most of the time.
I'm a participant in that endeavor as well. And although I don't go on as often as synchronicities, my life would seem strange if I didn't have synchronicities. But I frequently post over there on occasion. So I'm part of that project as well. And I'm very honored to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm glad to have you too. As you know, other things, I would say, you know, Pleiadian thing, you know, that I've been led by the Pleiades through many, many areas. Also in my life, actually, Pleiades also affiliated with the synchronicity coming into my life, I think, pretty big. And, you know, along with that, and you've known this too, is, you know, my passion for Christ and everything like that and how it all connects. And I've wandered through many, many various areas in spirituality and trying to find out the connection to it all. And, you know, that's, I think, really what all the projects that I have, you know, that I work on are really focused on is, you know, reflecting the principles and the virtues that Christ himself carried along in life as well. You know, and showing that it's not out of the loop of all this spirituality in these different realms, you know?
Oh, definitely. One of the things I've done recently, and people will be seeing it in the days ahead, is I've looked up and hooked up with various organizations that have had a formative effect on my spirituality over the years, including the United Lodge of Theosophists, where I gave my first major public talk way back in the 1970s, to the Ascended Masters Teaching Foundation at Mount Shasta, which did not start producing its writings and making them available to the public until after I'd left that part of my life. But when I decided to return, I stumbled across them, and all the answers I'd been seeking were there. Right in front of me. They've been there all along. However, those books were not available until the AMTF made them available. So that's going to be percolating into my spirituality, into my workshops, into my presentations in the days ahead. And there, those are very syncretic and universalist teachings. So a lot of the hostility that some people feel towards certain religions is absent. In that you have Hercules and Kuan Yin and Athena and Christ cooperating together to help people get unstuck from the ignorance and the illusion that is our material universe. So I'm finding it very exciting because Athena and I do lots of interfaith activity. So the Ascended Master material is phenomenally interfaith. So I'm really getting excited about working on that.
Fantastic. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, that's one of the things. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
That's one of the things I've realized very, very recently is how much of an illusion this place is and how we really need to get back to the higher aspect of ourself and know not only that that is the truth, but also be the reflection of how we can move out of that realm of materiality keeping us back. I think you'd agree.
I would most definitely agree.
Excellent.
Now, how did you meet John Peruca? Was that through the store? I don't remember if it was at the Barbarian Bazaar that you guys met or if you met in another way.
No. It was through your little beautiful your little booth of extraordinary accessories, I guess I could say.
That's a good way of saying spiritual accessorizing. I like that.
it was synchronistically. It was synchronistically I was there, and, you know, and he showed up. And I mean, I say it synchronistically because there are many times that I was there and he didn't show up. And it was very, it was around the time that we were like talking about all of it, maybe the week before or whatever. I swear it was probably the week before. And then we showed up and we were there and we're talking and there's John. And then there we go. And I met him and I think I met him one other time. I'm not sure, but I've talked to him many times, though. That's for sure.
Yeah, he's an awesome individual. I'm glad he'll be joining us tonight. And you're doing a lot to preserve the Oliphant mystery. Back when we were in Pennsylvania and Artemenos, the heart of it was there. I remember we were photographing the pages. We had the pages of with commentary. I still have those somewhere, but I haven't located them yet, but they will be back up. And you've also started photographing the pages and you've created a website. Care to tell us about that?
Yeah, it's just on Instagram. I put it on Mirror Living. You can find me on Instagram as Mirror Living. And I just put up the pictures of the book that he put together for me, because he knew that I was very interested, and he saw that, you know, maybe I had, you know, I could help bring it out there more so people could see, because the physics and the amount of the research that he did is pretty wild. And so I just tried taking some of those pictures and throwing it on Instagram for right now, on my YOLA site, which is YOLA.com. I think it's just Mirror Living, YOLA.com. But I'm going to try to make a page strictly for Oliphant with all those pictures, along with maybe my own research, along with our research together, and different things as well.
That's phenomenally awesome. And I see that the prophet of the Oliphant mystery himself has just joined us. And I'm going to invite him on in a second. It's always great touching base with you, Mirror Living, and I'm really looking forward to all the projects that we've started, that we've worked on, and that we will no doubt work on in the future. I have a really good feeling about our collaboration and all the exciting places where it can lead.
Excellent. Me too. Thank you.
And now, without further ado, the prophet and discoverer of the Oliphant mystery, John Peruca himself.
Yeah. So, Hercules, is John on too or what?
Are you there, John?
Yeah, Mirror Living's here.
Yeah. Yeah, with some introduction, man.
Oh, I'm very happy to have you on. I was telling folks how we met. And how when we had the Barbarian Bazaar, which was also known as the Mount Olympus Trading Post, you used to come by, and that you met Mirror Living there, and that led to Beyond Athena and myself, Mirror Living, joining this sacred guardian tradition and of our major preoccupation with what you discovered. Now, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself before we begin? What led you to the Oliphant mystery?
Well, first of all, I discovered the secret of the pyramids way before I discovered the secret in Oliphant. I come from with my mother from Brooklyn to Oliphant, and I noticed the first couple of weeks I was there, there's something strange about the town. There was too many churches downtown in all different denominations, but I didn't know anything. You know what I mean? But later on, I figured out what it was. Okay, so. One night in 1976, this is 39 years ago, I was reading the newspaper, and I noticed that a man and a woman, they were doing fashions, you know what I mean, making fashions, exhibiting clothes, and I noticed a man and woman's bodies could be resolved into pyramids, if you use your imagination. So next day, I took a ride. I went for a walk around Oliphant. And Oliphant is surrounded by a lot of woods in that area. And I come to an evergreen trail, and there was a tree, an evergreen tree. And look, an evergreen tree, it's like a pyramid. You know what I mean? It's not a perfect pyramid. It's mathematicians will call it a right circular cone. But then I took a bus ride, and I start thinking about these things. And I noticed a blade of grass was it comes to a triangle. And the mountains around here are pretty flat. But years ago, a mountain was a volcano, another pyramid. So I was thinking about it all night. And I come to the conclusion that the pyramid, it's all pyramids. But they're distorted. They're not perfect pyramids like you see in a textbook. You have to use your imagination. And
but there was some sacred geometry there. The pyramid is a symbol that is deep in our psyche. So it seems like this symbol, which sideways is a pyramid, reached out and touched you in some way and started making connections inside your mind.
Yeah. It's sort of blended all together, you know what I mean? And I realized that I can resolve 85% of natural objects into triangles or pyramids. Then and there, you know what I mean? So
mm-hmm.
I told some guys in Greenpoint. I had a room in there, and they were the first to know what the secret appearance. But they didn't ask. They didn't care. You know what I mean? Nobody believed me. So anyway, a year later, I was walking in Greenpoint, that's in Brooklyn, and all of a sudden I was thinking about what is matter. You know, what are we made out of? What is everything made out of? And I swear a voice correctly told me. I was thinking they said light. So then I said, all of it. Matter is light, condensed light organized into pyramids. Now, these are not perfect pyramids. They're distorted, and they're all different shapes, you know what I mean? But everything can be, if you use your imagination, it stretch your mind a little bit, which many people can't. You can resolve them into triangles or pyramids. And there is a theory I learned later, that this famous scientist, he's a pretty famous scientist, he come up with the idea that that everything's triangulated. But he never went a step further, that the triangles form pyramids.
But,
so,
John,
yes.
there was a man that recently came out within the past few years who was a surfer, and he came up with a theory, and I visualized it just now when you were talking about it, and, there's shapes that it makes, but they're little pyramids that make the shape, the full shape. And I remember seeing the graphic of it. And when you mentioned that, I was like, there it is. So I'll have to find that, and then you can share it. So
no, I know. I read
see.
That. Yeah, I read
this
it.
It
was on a magazine.
Yeah.
I keep up on these things. And his theory, I didn't know anything about pyramids, he said to me, but his theory is the theory of everything. He's working on that.
Mm.
And
now,
he was
believe
a surfer.
You're right.
When you said that, when you said he was a surfer, I remember that, yeah. His theory is the theory of everything. And I claim my theory is the theory of everything. But I come out definitely and said everything's a pyramid.
I remember we talked about fractals the last time we were in Pennsylvania, and you were explaining how this related to fractals. I'm not the scientist.
Oh, yeah. That's another piece of evidence. Fractals are triangles and pyramids. A guy named, I don't know, Mendeloff or something like that, Mendeloff or something, he discovered that. Yeah, you're right. And I use that as a piece of evidence, a good piece of evidence. These fractals are triangles, and everything can be resolved into these triangles or pyramids. They're really pyramids.
Now, how does that connect with the elephant, John?
Okay, well, let me explain, because you have to study what I figured out, the pyramids, because they lead into the secret of elephants. Okay, now I knew everything was made from pyramids alike. So I had to find a mechanism involving the pyramid or triangle and the light. And I was studying electronics at the time. And you know about the primary colors of television? You know how color television works?
Mm-hmm.
It's based on the primary colors. Newton discovered this, that you take the red, blue, and green colors, and it's like a disc, circles of them, you know what I mean? And you mix them up in different amounts, you get any color in the rainbow, anything, you hear me? You get thousands of different shades. And in the middle, I noticed that you got the red, blue, and green primary colors on television, and in the middle was a triangle, pyramid. And it was,
so, John, are we refracting this through a prism?
Pardon me?
Is this sort of like refraction through a prism?
Yeah, well, the prisms are like triangles. They're pyramids, really. Yeah, it's something like that.
Okay.
That's probably involved, too. I got that involved, you know what I mean? But later
now,
on, it becomes complicated later on.
But I
right,
shared
right now,
with the audience already how you had initially told me that Oliphant was the light from Olympus, and that's what got me hooked. And then what totally got me hooked was the fact that these churches that you mentioned make the shape of the constellation Orion. And Orion plays very heavily into the cosmic mythologies that I've explored. And also it's an earlier version of Hercules in that he carries a club and he has a lion skin. So it's very clear who it represents. Can you tell us a little bit about Orion and the churches?
Okay, well, let me explain, because what I'm going to explain, you have to understand what I'm going to say now. That leads into the churches.
Okay.
So I got I knew everything was based on pyramids of light, and I got that mechanism, a triangle. In the middle was a triangle with the three colors, the primary colors of light, red, blue, and green, discovered by Newton. And I noticed that everything's made out of double pyramids. So I added another triangle at the bottom with three more circles. And I meshed them together, you know what I mean? I mixed them together, and a man formed. Believe it or not, a little man formed. Okay, now, later on, so I knew it was like that, you know what I mean? The pyramids form matter. Pyramids of light are matter. And this leads into the elephant mystery. One night, now this is now 19 years later, maybe 18, 19 years later. This was I originally discovered this in 1976. I knew everything's made pyramids of light, you know what I mean? And they form like four pyramids, and it's three circles in the middle. Anyway, I'm sitting on the roof at night. I knew it was at night. I was reading the newspaper. And I get up. I just about to go down into my apartment, my mother's apartment, and I notice that the churches had the same pattern. See, just you have to explain. I discovered the secret of pyramids. Then I discovered the churches. They had the same pattern as my theory. I said, how could that be? I discovered it. I didn't have it published or anything like that. How could the churches have the same? They had, you know, it was three churches. Yeah, three churches, and it's around, in the middle was a pyramid, a church with a pyramid, three domes, three churches had domes. Let's see, the St. Patrick's to my right had a dome. Then there was the St. Cyril's had a dome. And the Russian church, my mother went, they had a dome. So three domes, that's the three circles. And then on the side, not exactly in the middle, was the Holy Ghost Church, and that had a pyramid. And I was flabbergasted. I was stunned. How could this be? You know what I mean? And that led me to the secret of Oliphant, the town is the most mysterious town in the history of the world. All the secrets are there. The answers to the secrets.
I remember when we went down with you to Oliphant and you took us on the tour.
Yeah.
And we read the book. We read all of your writings. And we've had countless conversations. And what struck me about the Oliphant mystery, have you ever seen those pictures that are made of like little tiny other pictures? Where if you look at it too close, you can't see anything, but if you pull it back, it makes a bigger picture.
Like a photo collage.
The Oliphant mystery is a lot like that, because it's easy to discount any like little piece of the puzzle and to say, oh, okay, I could discount it. But if you look at the sheer number of synchronicities, and if you look at the sheer number of facts that make up the Oliphant mystery, you can't discount it. So it's something that's very elusive, and it's a mystery in the true sense of the word, in that you really have to look at it to see it.
Yeah.
It's something that can easily be dismissed, but then you lose the whole point of it. And the more you look at it and the more you see the connections, the more information you can glean from it. And you've devoted your life to this.
Yeah,
because
everything.
You left us quite a heritage.
Yeah, because every once in a while I discover something about it. And remember, I discovered the secret of the pyramids in 1976, and the elephant, I tied it in with the elephant mystery in 1997. That's when I discovered that the churches have the same pattern as what my theory suggests, you know what I mean? And so I went to my friend, he's an engineer, and He came and visited, you know, he checked it out. And he believed that the churches were so big and fantastic, beautiful churches. They're like mini cathedrals. And he told me, he gave me some good advice. He says, go around elephants, check out the museums and the libraries, you know what I mean? Find all you can about elephants. So I did. And one day, about 2 weeks later, I was in the library, in the Scranton Library, Albright Library. They had my theory there, if you want to, anybody wants to study it. I was sitting at a desk, and I decided to go to see what elephant looks like on a map. I never bothered checking it out. And believe it or not, it's a sphinx. The borough of elephant has the same the shape as a sphinx. So I told my friend.
Nobody
knew it.
A scarab that you could only see from the air.
Yeah, that's later on.
A woman
in Wilkes-Barre discovered that.
Yeah, it showed up on the
scarab
topographical map.
Yeah, okay, well, anyway, when I discovered the Sphinx, the borough of elephants and giant Sphinx. And I took to my friend. Finally, he agreed with me with the Sphinx. I used to go to the bars, and I said, there's a Sphinx and elephant 5 miles long. Nobody believed me. So I used to bet him. I bet him pre-beers and the dinners, you know. And I showed him satellite photographs.
You must have done well for a while.
Yeah, they thought that. Most of the guys thought I was crazy. Yeah, but when I showed them the satellite photograph, I think it's on a map. It's a giant thing.
Before we go to break, and we have the break in a few minutes, you were something of a mad scientist, John. I remember when we went for beers and dinner one day. You told us all these stories of your youth, and you were kind of like a young mad scientist, a young Dr. Frankenstein there in
you have to go on a break now, huh?
No, we have a few more minutes, but before we go on break, why don't you tell us a little bit about some of your youthful hijinks?
Yeah, when I was I lived in Brooklyn, I was assistant chemist one of the factories, the big glue factories, you know. And I had several chemistry jobs before that. But anyway, I had my own laboratory in a funeral parlor. We lived in a funeral parlor, me and my mother. And she used to take care of the funeral parlor, help the woman. And I did some experiments down in the morgue, down where they embalmed the people. You know what I mean? And I had a couple of good ideas. A machine.
My idea was to tie their shoelaces together in case of a zombie apocalypse, but nobody took me up on that.
Yeah. But anyway,
what did you do, John?
Pardon me?
What did you do? What type of experiments did you do?
Well, I came up with an idea, but I don't want to talk about it too much.
Okay.
I call it the atomic resonator. You hear me? It has fantastic powers, I claimed. I combined two machines. I won't tell you how I did it. And so I sent it to MIT, the engineers at MIT, and they couldn't figure it out. So they told me to send it to the, advanced research projects in Washington, in the Pentagon, you know what I mean? And so one guy, an engineer, says it won't work. But I disagree with him, because after that, we moved to elephant. I discovered the secret of elephant, and I disagree with him completely. But anyway, it's still, nobody's heard of it. Very few people have heard of it. And that's one of the ideas I had. I had a lot of ideas.
We have people from MIT, so they might take a look at it afresh if you still have the plans.
Yeah, I still got it somewhere. I don't know. But I could tell them what the idea is. It's very simple. It's just a combination of two machines, but it controls the atom. So you control the atom, man. It's powerful. That's a powerful machine. But anyway, that's one of my great ideas in Greenpoint. When I worked in a lab, I had my own laboratory, and I had a lot of ideas. When I was in the Army, I thought I'd become an inventor or something, you know what I mean? And the Army needs a lot of inventions. So I thought about 40 of them while I was in the Army. 40 things. I don't even remember half of them now. But I did apply for one. Not a patent, but a search patent. They call it a research patent. I found that a lot of people knew about this idea I had. So I used to think it's crazy ideas, you know what I mean?
Olympus has started an organization called the Sons and Daughters of Hermes. And it is for mad scientist types who can invent things that will radically change our world. Mira Living, our mutual friend, is one of the sons of Hermes, as is our engineer and producer, Terry Power. I would like to ask you to join us, and maybe we can look at your inventions and see what practical applications they might have for the world today. And we do have a few folks from MIT in that bunch, so they won't judge you as harshly or turn away your inventions as readily. What do you say, John Peruca?
Well, most of their ideas, you know what I mean? You have to come up with a working patent or something. And my ideas are just ideas right now. And I forgot half of them because I was in the Army. That was 40, 50 years ago. So I don't remember half. I just had one idea. I saw my mother. She used to clean the windows in Greenpoint, in the funeral parlor. And she used to sit on a ledge, like on the windowsill. And I know that I said it's dangerous, so I had to hold her legs all the time. So I decided to come up with a better idea. And I said, take a sponge, and you put a magnet inside the sponge, and take another sponge and put a magnet inside that sponge, and the inside magnet will control the outside magnet. Well, a lot of guys thought of that. I had a search done for a patent. It doesn't work unless you get a very strong magnet, like electromagnet or something like that. So I lost $85 on that one. But ideas like that, practical ideas, you know what I mean?
Well, nowadays,
I don't think you can do it now.
On that note, I put the scepter in Athena's hands.
Okay, we're about to go on a musical break, and our first song, or our only song, actually,
changes you spin the web of life. grow old, oh, she sings the last chorus begins. With a voice as gentle as winter's lace, a new thread through the wheel it is fed. Woe to those who see her face, Lady of the Silver Wheel, Lady of the Silver Wheel. Ariane, what lady of changes you spin the web of life, Lady of the Silver Wheel, Lady of the Silver Wheel. Ariane, what a lady of changes you spin the web of life, the web of life, web of
The Magic Jukebox Podcast presents Caldera Fest Pagan Music Festival, May 26th through May 30th in Lafayette, Georgia. This event will feature the best in pagan music and over 100 vendors and workshops. Featuring Tuatha Day, Dave the Bard, S.J. Tucker, Wendy Rule, Digis Christ Superdrum, Dragon Ritual Drummers, and many more. Also featuring the official release of the Green Album. This eclectic compilation of thoughts and sounds will feature various acts performing at Caldera Fest, benefiting the Rainforest Trust. Come on out and have the time of your life. Caldera Fest Pagan Music Festival, May 26th through 30th at Cherokee Farms in Lafayette, Georgia. For more information, visit calderafest.com today. See you there.
Come join us on International Pagan Radio. We air great artists such as Tuatha Dé, Dragon's Head.
Some of them come in the lonely, some of them stay for a spell, some of them stay for a message from the oracle in the well.
Green Fortune.
I remember when I first walked in this garden, I, against my will.
David Wood. Rising.
Lose yourself in rhythm, lose yourself in time, caught up in the spiral,
and many, many more.
Follow in the music, follow in the beat, dancing with.
Like our page and join our group on Facebook. InternationalPaganRadio.com, where it's all pagan, all the time.
You're listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. And now, back to the show.
Thank you for enjoying our midpoint musical interlude. We actually listened to Darif the Bard doing Lady of the Silver Wheel, as if you couldn't guess.
And I was looking forward to Isis Unveiled, because that's one of my favorite occult tomes. I doubt if the song has anything to do with that, but still, it is one of my favorite occult tomes. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. If you're joining us here at Midpoint, we were interviewing Mirror Living and John Peruca, both sacred guardians of the Oliphant mystery, with myself and Athena. We're going to be wrapping up that segment, and then we have Alfred Santariga, a fellow explorer into ancient and modern mysteries, and we'll be meeting him next. So without further ado, welcome Mirror Living, and welcome John Peruca.
Okay, Hercules, I left off. I discovered the man in out of two main pyramids involving the primary colors of light, and a man formed. Well, guess what?
What?
I discovered that maybe around 1979 and 1980, a woman scientist from Arizona University. First of all, I called it the pyramidal creation pattern, and I guessed at it that it extends throughout the whole universe. You know what I mean? I just took a guess at it. In 1980, a group of scientists on this woman, they decided to stack all the photographs of the different galaxies on top of one another and see if there's any pattern. And guess what formed? A man
what?
Formed. A man. They call him the Stick Man. And he was pretty popular for a while. Nowadays, they don't emphasize it. I think they're making a big mistake. That's my pyramid man in the form of a Stick Man. It's the same thing. She discovered, I discovered a theory, and she discovered the experimental pattern, you know what I mean, which I guessed that it this pattern extends throughout the universe. And it's like the Russian doll. You ever see the Russian doll?
Yeah.
One doll and another one. You start with a big doll, you put a little doll, less size doll, smaller size into one another, and you get a little tiny doll at the end. It's the
You've
same
seen
thing.
Those.
You've seen it, yeah.
So we will begin our next segment of the Oliphant Mystery with the mystery of the Stick Figure Man. I want to thank both you and Mirror Living for being on the show tonight. And I want
thank
to
you.
Announce that Unraveling the Oliphant Mystery will become a regular feature here on Voice of Olympus at least once a month. So Mirror Living, you and I will work on that. And John will check with your schedule to see when you're available. And Athena will, as always, grant me the light of her wisdom when I'm putting these things together, because I, like John Peruca, have a tendency towards mad schemes. So thank you so much, guys, and I look forward to the next time you're on the show.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks
for having me.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Okay, good night.
Okay, good night.
It looks like I'm going to be hitting the books on quantum physics again, doesn't it?
Indeed so. We did in Pennsylvania, not so much here in New Jersey during our sojourn, investigate ancient mysteries and modern mysteries as well, which is something that I started doing as a very young child. In Pennsylvania, it was called the Society for the it was called the Regional Folklore Society of Northeastern Pennsylvania. The folks down there had concerns about my naming it anything paranormal, so it became the Regional Folklore Society.
That didn't work out for us because it was also partially the name of a folk song group.
Yes, so the folk song
so
people
don't
used, crash our meetings occasionally. But anyway, nothing is perfect. And here in northeastern New Jersey, it's become the Center for the Study of Living Myth, and we do that monthly at the Creskill Library. Very shortly, the Center for the Study of Living Myth will be going mobile, and we'll be starting a new round of activities at the Creskill Library for a year or so. We do investigate mysteries hands-on, and we are going to begin again now that we're establishing our Temenos. And one of the interesting individuals I've met recently is Alfred Santariga, who is phenomenally interesting, and he also investigates mysteries. So tonight we're going to meet him for a little while, and very shortly we'll have an entire show devoted to him. And from what little conversation we've had so far, I can see him being a frequent guest. So without further ado, I welcome you to the Voice of Olympus, Alfred. How are you?
Hi, Hercules. Hi, Athena. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure.
Now, you're a very interesting individual, and as I was researching you a little bit, you're much more interesting than the 10 minutes our introduction can grant you tonight will do you justice. So we'll just focus on a very narrow band tonight and then get to know more of you in subsequent episodes of Voice to Olympus. You are an investigator of mysteries. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I'm an experiencer, and through my experiences, I've put a team together. It's called the Bronxville Paranormal Society, and we go out and we do investigations. And you know, we cover everything, the gamut. We don't leave any stones unturned. We did a really great investigation on ancient stone chambers here in New York. And you know, we just go out. We do everything. We've been invited up to Pine Bush, May 21st, to awesome. do a two hour presentation. And we're going to do the first hour will be on our UFO experiences, and our second hour will be on our paranormal investigations. And then from there, we got invited to Kingston for another UFO conference in August, I believe it is. No, July. And I think you guys have something coming up in August too, right?
We have so many things coming up that it's hard to keep track of them sometimes. But yes,
okay, no. But, I mean, you know, I'm an experiencer. My mom used to have visions. You know, she would always get premonitions, and you know, it's just I was told by I've had like gut feelings my whole life. Just you always knew when something was going to happen, and I was told by a psychic and by a Reiki master at two different times in my life that I should investigate my name, research my name. That's what they both told me. And, you know, I'm Italian, and a lot of Italian last names have meanings. So I researched my name, and it turns out my first name, Alfred, means royal blood, and my last name, Santa Riga, means holy line. And,
very cool.
Yeah, and, I mean, I honestly, I don't know if that's got anything to do with all the paranormal stuff that happens to me or all the UFO experiences I have. I constantly see UFOs, and I believe, you know, I have pretty good belief that I may be an abductee, and I don't throw that out there too often, but only because the time I was having like this, it was happening to my son in the next room, and my daughter actually saves my son, but that's a long story. So,
wow.
I mean, if my daughter didn't scream and wake everybody up in the house, I wouldn't have popped back into my body and went into the room. And, you know, my daughter was saying that, you know, the son was being taken out to the light in the backyard, and that's the same thing that was happening to me at the same time. And so, you know, I kind of validated that night. But, you know, I mean, I've had all kinds of paranormal experiences, and every time we go out, something happens. We always, you know, we have a psychic, and she's very, very good, and we have a remote viewer, and he's very good, and they always say, you're going to find this, or you're going to do that, and, you know, and I always laugh, and I always say, yeah, okay, never go out, ever, ever go out expecting to find anything. I just don't. I don't know if just be growing up in New York, you know what I mean, my mindset as a New York guy, but we never go out expecting to find anything, even though we know in the back of our mind the psychic said this and the psychic said that, and we always have amazing experiences, and just, you know, it never fails to. I'll give you a quick story on the ancient stone chambers. I've read a ton of stuff about them. You guys probably have them in Jersey as well, I believe, but I read a ton of stuff about them, and, you know, long story short, we're getting ready to go out, and my brother says to me, my brother's a parapsychologist, and he's been doing this for 40 years, and my brother says, bring your night vision goggles, and I'm like, why? I'm going during the day. To bring your night vision goggles. Okay. So we go to the ancient stone chambers, and we're doing our investigation, you know, with the temperature and all this stuff, the magnetic fields and all this other things, and I throw the night vision goggles up, and there on the back wall, looked like Roman or Greek chiseling, like somebody had chiseled something into the wall, like numbers and letters and stuff like that, like maybe even like what do they call the Viking runes? You know those runes? Yeah. And I had, you know, but you can't see them with your naked eye, you can't get them in a photograph, but if you throw the night vision goggles on and you change the spectrum of light, they just pop. They just pop up out of nowhere. And that was just one chamber. We went to seven, and we found something in six of the seven chambers that just blew our minds. I mean, you know, just blew our minds.
That's awesome. And that place is on our list to investigate as well, especially now that you told me that there are seven chambers, because 7 is one of those numbers that keeps occurring in our investigations, and it has very ancient roots, and we've been playing with that number for many years now. So thank you so much for giving me a heads up. I've just moved that ahead on my list.
Now, there's actually more than 7, and just in our area alone, I mean, that was all we got to that day because they're pretty far apart, and you have to drive to every single one. And then we go through a whole regimen of stuff we do at each one. So it takes a little bit of time to get through everything. But we got to 7 that one particular day. But I think there's just in Putnam County, New York alone, I think there's like 19. And those are the ones that haven't been knocked down because they've knocked a lot of them down to build homes. You know, builders come in, they buy the land, they knock everything down. It's very sad.
It's very sad, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
So that was just a small taste, and from our previous conversation and from the internet sites you had me look at, that's a very, very, very small taste. You're a renaissance man in the paranormal, Al.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
You're a renaissance man in the paranormal.
Yeah, I don't know about that. It started off as just, you know, going out with a bunch of friends and experience and stuff, and then I said, you know what? I'd really like to put a team together of guys that went and do this scientifically and really, you know, just see what we can get to, man. And, you know, I put a team together, and everybody's really good at what they do. And everybody, I try to surround myself with people smarter than me so it makes me look good. You know what I mean? And
I'm the same way. I love people whose intelligence and knowledge exceeds my own. And
absolutely.
I rely on them very often. The closest thing, my wife.
Absolutely. And but you know, and we go out, and like I said, we've never failed to find something or experience something. It's just pretty incredible. You know, everybody says it's me that everything's attracted to me, and you know, I don't know, everybody on my team is pretty sensitive, you know, so I would never claim it was me, you know. Like even One of the recce masters, the day I met her, was just pumping gas at a gas station, and she pulled in because she was lost, and we started talking, and one thing led to another, and I went to shake her hand goodbye, and when I shook her hand, she got like an electric shock, and she jumped back, and she goes, "Wow, did you feel that?" And I said, "Feel what?" She goes, "You just gave me, you know, just got electrocuted," and she goes, "You're what did she call me? An intuitive." And at the time, I said, "Lady, I don't even know what an intuitive is. You know, it's, what are you talking about?" And then she said, "Oh, you know, and she explained what it was. I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I got gut feelings all my life. You know, I just call it a gut feeling. You know, I would never claim to have any kind of ability or anything like that."
One of the things that psychics used to tell me back in the day when I was very heavy in investigations is, where the hell did they dig you up from? There's something very ancient and very out of place here. And I have to agree, but I bring that perspective to our investigations, a very mythic and folklorish, I guess, perspective. And I find that whether it's the guys with the gizmos and the heat detectors and the night goggles, or the psychics, or the researchers, or the folklorists, or the religious folk, everybody brings something to the team, and together we manage to pinpoint something totally incredible. So I'm grateful for all the talent that surrounds my efforts as well. So I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I mean, I couldn't agree 100% more. It's exactly the way I feel.
Now, our circles have started to converge, and some people I've started to meet with, to be interviewed by yourself next time, and then to be a frequent guest to contribute to topics as they intersect with whatever it is that you've been exploring and doing. I know that we intend on looking at those ancient underground structures, so I'd love to have you on that show. But we're doing things on UFOs, we're doing things on all sorts of psychic phenomena, so I'd like to invite you to be a frequent guest and not just a one- or two-time guest.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Absolutely, I would love to be a frequent guest. It's just, you know, I just have to check my schedule. We got so much stuff on the calendar. You know, we've just been invited to, the team's been invited up to they call it the America Stonehenge in New Hampshire.
Oh, I've been there.
And I met the owner, and he gave us carte blanche, and he said, "Bring the team up. We'll keep the place open all night, and you guys can have the run of it." You know, and I was like, "Oh, absolutely, would love to go up there." You know, so we're just, we had so much stuff on our calendar, but you know, I would definitely try to be on as much as I possibly can.
Very awesome. We have a busy calendar too, so I'm sure between us we'll find the time. And I want to thank you very much. And how can folks learn more about you and your team in the interim?
Okay, you can just go to our website. It's called, very simple, the Bronxville Paranormal Society. You can find us on the net. I mean, we're on every social media outlet I think there is. My tech guy is very savvy that way. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. And as a matter of fact, when we go up to Pine Bush and do our presentation, we're actually doing two investigations there that night, and we're going to stream the second one live on Periscope and Twitter.
Very awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Alfred, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to speak with us tonight. I thank you very much, and I look forward to our continued interaction and to our next conversation, whether it be recorded and broadcast or not.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Really, I really do. Thank you very much.
Okay, be well, my friends. Safe and joyous journeys.
Ciao.
Ciao. Well, that was fun. I look forward to speaking with Al again, and I'm really happy with Mirror Living and John Peruca being on. We have a lot going on, ladies and gentlemen, and I'll just give you a little sample here. We're wrapping up the 12th Labor role-playing game at the Paramus Community School, but it will continue at the Tenafly Public Library, and then it'll start up in Paramus again sometime this summer. Also, Star Center Atlantis, which we've been planting and planning and experimenting with and developing curriculums for nearly a year, will be launching this month. You can check our website for details. We're also having two other Atlantis classes in May and June, one that's related to the Mark Age teachings and another one that's associated with the teachings of the Ascended Masters Teaching Foundation, which preserves the writings of the Bridge to Freedom Initiative back in the early 50s to the early 60s. I'm now going to turn over the scepter to Athena, who will look to see what our oracle has told us about CERN updates.
Oh, we have some really great CERN updates. On Thursday night, on the 12th of May, 2016, Brad Murphy of Murphy's Midnight Rounders will join Terry and Robin under the Shady Tree discussing Caldera Fest, music, and the Green Album. On Tuesday, 17th of May, Terry and Robin will continue their discussion of ritual components with a conversation about elemental fire and the association with the geographical south. On Thursday, the 19th of May, Tuatha Dia will be hanging out under the Shady Tree with Terry and Robin, and they will talk about the Green Album, Caldera Fest, pagan music, and much more. You can see Terry and Robin at Caldera Fest in Lafayette, Georgia on Memorial Day weekend, the 26th to the 30th of May, at Pittsburgh Pagans in the Park on the 11th of June, and at Ishtar Fest on the 18th of June.
You might also want to mention the live on-air full moon ritual on Tuesday night on May 24th, Athena.
Oh, forgot that one.
Well, CERN always has so much and so many things going on. For more information about us, Hercules Invictus and Athena Vistri, you can visit our website, which is www.herculesinvictus.net. If you want to contact us or be part of our community, you can visit us on Facebook. You could friend me on Hercules Invictus or join our Mythic Atlantis or Voice of Olympus groups. We're also available for workshops, mythic activities, epic special events, and mythic appearances. We do a lot of that here in Tenafly and beyond Tenafly. In our next show, we will revisit the Unarian revelations about Atlantis, and our guests will be Celeste Pell, Tracy Kennedy, and Guillermo Briceno from the Unarius Academy of Sciences. This is an official announcement, and I may as well announce it here and now. We are going to be making the doors of Artemenos open and public again this month, May 2016. And we will be not only here in New Jersey, but in Pennsylvania and New York to start. And we have other branches or groves or whatever you'd like to call them, temples, springing up throughout the country. So we will let you know about those as they activate. But Artemenos, which means our sacred space, is now alive and active and open to the public. And on that note, I bid you all a wonderful evening. May you have joyous journeys and happy adventures. This is me, Hercules Invictus.
And Athena Victory.
Signing off and signing out. Have a wonderful evening.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.